episode of Work Like a Mother. My name's Amy, and this is my podcast all about working mums. Each week, I interview a different mum about what they do and how they do it, and ask them to spill the secrets on having it all, just not all at once. This is actually the last episode of the season. I had planned a few more episodes, but things just haven't worked out with interviews and stuff. So rather than stressing about it, I'm just going to let this one rest and then bring those wonderful people on to the next season instead. So you'll be having a little break from this podcast if you listen to it regularly for a couple of months. We'll be back at the beginning of 2019, hopefully in January, but we shall see. Obviously, as you've probably heard if you listen to this podcast a lot, I also have a job. I work 4 days a week as a marketing operations manager at a digital agency. I should probably be able to say that. And obviously, I have my son. I also do this podcast. I have another podcast called Read's Gonna Read, which is going to be carrying on over the sort of festive period. And also, I do try to have a social life sometimes around the edges of that. I really want this podcast to be the best it can be rather than a sort of rush job. So I'm going to be taking a little bit of time out to work on that and to get an even better season next time, if that's possible, because obviously my guests this season have been absolutely wonderful. I would like to get more of a variety of different kind of people and different jobs onto the podcast, so I'm going to be working on that in particular, trying to find some people with interesting jobs to share with you, or interesting and different jobs that we haven't heard from before. So and obviously the festive period, November, December, always just becomes way more hectic than you think it will be. So I'm just giving myself a little bit of a break for that and to make sure that we can have a lovely Christmas. Gosh, can you believe we're talking about Christmas already? I don't think it's that. I mean, it's only 2 months away. I know some people don't like to talk about it until the 1st of December. So I apologise if that is you. So that's kind of what's going on with the podcast. You can keep following me on Instagram. I'm still going to be chatting about the kind of things that I chat about on this podcast at Amy Liz Blog, as you know, if you listen at the end of the podcast each week. And I hope that you will subscribe as well so that you can find out when the next episode will be going live. This week, to finish off the season, my guest is Sarah Darby Need. She reached out to me by email when she'd been listening to the podcast to share her story, and I'm just really glad that she did because it was really interesting to chat to her. She was a student parent. She got pregnant in her second year of uni just before she was supposed to go on her year abroad. And we chat about how she kind of made that happen, regardless of having a little baby in tow, and how she sort of started her career. So she also got pregnant again just before the end of her degree. So yeah, she's had a different experience than I have anyway, and probably a lot of people who went to university probably didn't have that experience either. So it's really interesting to chat to her and see how sort of tenacious she's been in the kind of pursuit of a career, despite what some people would think were quite big obstacles. Not to call her children obstacles, they're obviously not. We chatted about that. We chatted about sort of the financial difficulties that they had as a result of being student parents, and what it was like to move abroad when their daughter was probably about 9 months old, I would guess she would have been, if I'm doing my maths correctly. Sorry, Sarah, if that's wrong. And what that was like for her partner as well. And sort of the experience of being a student parent in general. So I thought this was really interesting and I'm really excited to share it with you. So I hope you enjoy this episode. Hi, Sarah. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi.
Would you like to introduce yourself for those who don't already know you?
Yes. So my name's Sarah. I am 27. I'll be 28 next Friday. So I'm just enjoying my last week of being a 27-year-old. And I am a marketing assistant with two young children, and I live up in York.
Lovely stuff. So I think it's probably best if we start at the very beginning, which is, I believe, a very good place to start. Because you found out you were pregnant whilst you were still studying at uni, didn't you?
I did, yes. So I'll try and keep it in a good order because it's quite a long story. But basically, I met my partner at the start of our second year of university. And just to give you some context, I was studying languages. So that's actually a 4-year degree with a year abroad. And my partner was studying history and archaeology. So he only had a 3-year degree.
Both of you were in second year?
We were both in second year. Okay, cool. But we met at the very beginning. And obviously, we started a relationship. And we always knew that in my third year, I'd be moving to Germany and then over to France. So there was always a question of what would happen. And we got to about May, I think, of the next year, the next academic year. So I was meant to be leaving Germany in June. And I actually found out that I was 5 months pregnant.
Oh my gosh. No turning back then, is there?
No, that's the thing. It was a huge shock. And I was very small when I was at university, and I probably didn't eat as much as I should have, and I didn't look after myself the way I should have. So I didn't really listen to my body and what it was telling me, and I didn't have any strong symptoms of pregnancy. So while I was smelling things that no one else could smell, and strangely, I couldn't eat Mexican food, and I couldn't place why I couldn't eat it anymore. Otherwise, I didn't really notice.
And those aren't necessarily what you would associate with being pregnant, I suppose. Like,
no,
just
exactly.
Smelling, you know, like occasionally you might smell something and be like, oh, can you smell that? And then no one else does. It doesn't make you go, oh my god,
exactly.
I must 100% be pregnant.
Well, I think when you're in a student house, I think,
oh god,
it's something that happens anyway. So I just put it down to being in a student house and it not being 100% as clean as I'd like it. So I didn't, none of us had a clue what was going on. And it was actually because my daughter, she was kicking. So that was how I found out. So obviously it's around the 4 or 5 month stage, isn't it, where you start to get a little bump and they start to kick. And so we had this whole process to go through where we had to work out what we were going to do. How would it work with our degrees? I remember, I think we went back home to my mum's house. We're both from Birmingham, conveniently, even though we studied in Hull. So, and our houses were 10 minutes down the road from each other.
Oh,
so
it's like fate.
It really was. So we just thought we'll go home. We'll get some space from everything, because we were actually in the middle of exams as well at university when all this happened. So I just thought the best thing I can do is put off my exams.
Yeah.
And go home and just really evaluate what we're going to do. And I just remember I got to the point after a couple of weeks where I just thought, if I have to drop out of my degree, I will. But it was really difficult to work out what support was out there, because student finance in particular, they don't really talk to you about the options you've got if you have dependents.
Yeah.
So there wasn't much resources out there for us to research and evaluate
how
our
was the
options.
What was the university like, sort of the support system at the university? Was there someone to talk to or not really?
Not really. I went and spoke to my lecturers pretty much as soon as I found out, and it was incredibly awkward.
Yeah,
obviously.
I can imagine.
But what was quite odd was that the lecturer who I always found to be more the strict lecturer and the kind of colder lecturer, she actually got quite emotional when I told her, and she said that there are loads of options and babies are so portable, and if I wanted to take my baby on my year abroad, then it'd be more than doable.
Yeah.
So it was nice to hear someone who you wouldn't expect.
Yeah, definitely.
Say, you can definitely do this. And my other lecturer, my German lecturer, she actually said that obviously this is completely my choice. She has no input in what I'm going to do moving forward. But realistically, I won't finish my degree unless I do my year abroad, because when you're studying languages, unless you've got someone in your family who speaks the language or you've spent a lot of time in those countries, it's so hard to gain fluency and native proficiency. So that was what really did it for us. We needed to make sure that if I was going to carry on with my degree, that it was so planned out that I'd be able to finish it in final year. So when I decided, I just thought, I'm just going to roll with it and see what happens. And what I decided to do was take a year out of university. And in that time, I would live with my mum back in Birmingham. But my partner, he would go back to university.
So he'd be then done then by that point.
Yeah, so by the time my year abroad, my year off from university would come to an end, he would have graduated.
Yeah.
So it was just prioritising who can we get done first,
yeah.
And then we'll sort out the other person then. So we had my daughter, Isla. We had her in October. Obviously, I found out I was pregnant in May and then had the baby in October. So
not a lot of time to prepare and get all the stuff together and things.
My family were incredible, though. And as soon as I told them I was pregnant, this is what's happening, They were so supportive. Honestly, I've never seen such a well-equipped nursery in my life. It was just full of stuff. They were great, and it really made me feel ready for the next year, because obviously with my partner going back to university, it meant that for the first year of being a mum, I was doing it in a long distance relationship.
Both of which are two hard things separately, long distance relationships and first year of parenthood, let alone combined.
That's the thing, we'd only been together for a year by the time I had my daughter Isla.
Were you worried about that?
No, if I'm honest, I think maybe because my mum's a single parent, I was very realistic that relationships can break down, and very young. We both didn't know what we wanted to do after university. We only thought about the next month or two. We weren't thinking in the future. And I think I just thought the most important thing is that we're both there for Isla, and that we're both supporting each other through it. But if for some reason we found that we didn't want to be together anymore, or it wasn't, you know, it just wasn't working, the situation, then that would be that, really. But I've seen my mum do the same thing. She was a single parent, and she got her degree in nursing when I was about 6 or 7 years old. And I remember watching her sit up. She was doing her dissertation until like 3 in the morning and things.
Gosh. And
so for me, it's quite nice to know that people can do it.
Yeah, of course. You had that good like role model, as it were.
Exactly, yeah. And I knew that my mum would support me as well. So I'd always have someone to rely on if I needed. So I wasn't too worried, and I just wanted to make sure we were enjoying ourselves, really. And I made sure that my partner, Harry, that he got to have the university experience for his final year. And I'd let him for a couple of weeks, I'd leave him to it, and he'd go out with his friends. And he did work full time as well during his final year.
Oh, my gosh.
So, yeah, I think he was exhausted at times. But yeah, he went to work. He studied as much as he needed to. He got that time with his friends, and then we would just alternate. So I would go up and see him for a week at a time, or when he got a break from his lectures, he'd come and see us in Birmingham. Though it was quite funny sometimes, because he lived with 6 other boys, so we were quite nervous how they'd react to a newborn baby being in their student house.
Yeah, how was it?
I absolutely loved it.
Oh my gosh. I want to see that TV program. That sitcom is a sitcom I want to see. 6 guys and a baby.
It was brilliant though. And I remember there were times where if Harry was at work and I ran out of nappies or something, I'd have to leave the baby with them while I ran to the shop. And I'd come back to just absolute chaos. Baby, you know when newborn babies get left and they do that scream where it's curdling, and they were all running around flustered, and they had to go and decompress in their rooms afterwards.
Oh, bless them. That's really sweet, though, that they sort of were supportive of him and of you as well.
Brilliant. And they've been over since, obviously, we finished university. They still come over and see us. And they've always been completely supportive of it all. And it was nice. I felt like I felt comfortable going up to visit. And it meant as well I got to see my friends, because that was quite hard. Suddenly, this life that I'd had for 2 years just came to an end, and I did miss my lifestyle up at university and all my uni friends. So it was a good balance. It meant that I wasn't completely cut off, and that motherhood hadn't completely changed my life. It was definitely an experience. I'm glad that we did it that way. For me and Harry, by the end of it, we definitely felt like a stronger couple, which was quite good. And then I also got a job. I think Isla was about 6 months old. And I'm one of those people, I'm not very good on maternity leave.
No, I'm the same.
So restless. And each day you wake up, don't you? And you think, I don't know what to do today.
I'll just go to the supermarket again.
So I actually got a job at Birmingham Airport. It was quite odd, I think, because of the stage I was at with my degree. I just didn't know what to do. And also there was a time limit, because once my partner finished his degree, then I would have to start doing mine again. So I worked at Boots in Birmingham Airport. And what's funny about it is that it was a night shift. So I had to get up at 2 in the morning and drive to the airport. And I would work until about 8, 9 o'clock in the morning. And then I would come home and think 2 days a week Isla went to nursery, and then the rest of the time I'd have to take Isla off my mum when she went to work. So I was dead on my feet for a good few months, but it was worth it. I enjoyed it, and I'd never do it again, but it was good for me to just get back into having something of my own. So and also it meant that I could put money aside, because once my degree started up again, I'd need some funds to support us. So I felt like I was contributing towards that, because I didn't want Harry to do it all by himself. Sometimes when you're a mum, a new mum, you just need to do things, don't you, that make you feel better.
Yeah, definitely, 100%, even if it isn't necessarily the most sensible or like practical thing. I think it's just sleep deprived anyway. Like, exactly. What's a bit more sleep deprivation on top of sleep deprivation? Not to be glib about it, obviously, but
yeah, I think especially Isla was a difficult sleeper, so I think it was more my mum who suffered from it.
Oh, bless, yeah, of course.
But people were great. My dad would come over sometimes in the daytime, and I'd go upstairs and have a nap.
And sometimes you only need like 2 hours, like if that, to kind of, yeah, just kind of carry you back through to the end of the day.
Yeah, so yeah, I did all of that basically. And then we had to start my year abroad. So that was the thing. I went from having a year out of university to moving abroad and jump starting it all again. So it was quite a shock. We got a flat in a place called Osnabrück, which is in northwest Germany. And I was studying French and German at the university there.
So were you just able to sort of defer your place there as well? Like, that was in tandem with...
Oh, yeah.
That was where you were going to go the year before. You know, if you hadn't been pregnant, that's where you were going to go as well.
Well, actually, if I hadn't have been pregnant, I was actually moving to Potsdam, which is just outside of Berlin.
Right.
Studying the same thing, but obviously it would have been nice to have been half an hour from Berlin. But I think when we looked it up, we just thought the living costs would be too high. We probably needed somewhere a bit more family friendly, although Potsdam probably would have been really family friendly, but we just wanted to make sure that we were going for the most sensible option. So we managed to find this flat in Osnabrück, which was incredible, and it was one of those Scandi style flats.
Oh, nice.
it was beautiful, and it was right in the center next to all the markets and things. So I think for our first flat as a family, we couldn't actually believe it. I think we had to pinch ourselves sometimes, because we'd gone from being students and, you know, commuting to see each other and things to having this home together. And it was absolutely amazing. And what happened was, obviously, Harry had finished his degree by this point. We decided that Harry would be a house husband, in effect, for a year.
Because did he speak German?
No.
No, so he was a bit of a disadvantage, I suppose.
Yeah, it was harder for him to get settled. So Germany was quite good, though. We met families straight away when we moved there. So there were people down the road who had a baby the same age. So we met up with them a lot. And then through my degree, I met people who actually also studied in Hull, and they on their year abroad. So that was really good. I made friends with them, and one of them in particular had exactly the same interests as Harry. So they got together and like gamed a lot and things like that.
Yeah.
So Harry managed to make his own friends and have his own life and go out when he wanted to. It was nice. We actually built a life there. I think with Harry being at home, it made it a lot easier. And if I needed to study at night, he would handle the bedtime routine and things. He learned how to cook, which was amazing. And he basically just made it as easy for me as possible.
I think the reason so many people struggle now with like the balance and stuff is because the world is set up for one person to take care of all the house stuff and one person to do all the work stuff. And it is obviously emotionally not necessarily easy, but easy logistically if one person's just dealing with each thing, but obviously that's not practical on a long-term basis at all.
No, and I think that it shouldn't be that someone has to do all of it themselves. I think if they want to, right, but I think there should definitely be a balance. I think it's healthier really, isn't it, to do it that way. But I think he just enjoyed being a dad And
because he won't have seen as much of Isla the first year, I suppose, if he'd been if you've been at home most of the time and sort of just come up for weeks and stuff.
Yeah, I think he needed that bonding time with her, because I think it was quite hard sometimes when she only wanted me.
Hard on both of you as well, like hard for him because he's sort of been rejected, but also hard on you to always have to be the one to sort of pick up the pieces, as it were.
Yeah, exactly. So and also Harry was actually younger than me, so there's a 2 year age gap. So he was 19 when I found out I was pregnant. So I think as well, in his final year, a year can make a lot of difference, can't it?
What,
especially I think for a man when they're maturing. So I think he suddenly got his own place. He was living with his baby, and I think he just suddenly took on his dad role and absolutely loved it. And that stayed with him, really. He's always had that natural instinct now, and always had a really strong bond with the kids, which is brilliant. It was nice to see him just really settled and enjoying himself. What happened then, we had to move over to France, and we didn't want to go at all. And I think because we'd just built this life there in Germany, it was really hard having to pack everything up and move over. And I think that's when it did get hard for Harry, because it was starting from scratch again. And he'd graduated about 9 months ago by this point. So I think for him, he was starting to think, what am I doing? And what's my next career wise?
I mean, that's a tough time regardless. Like, I remember I had an almost a nervous breakdown after I finished uni about, like, what do I want to do? What do I want to be? And I didn't even have a baby in the picture.
No, it is hard enough. And then to be moving around and not really have much stability. And we were very relaxed back then, because we moved to France and we knew that we'd be there for 6 months, but we didn't have a clue what we were going to do after. And we knew we had to move back up to Yorkshire, but we didn't know where we were going to live. We didn't know what job we would have, what job Harry would have. We just we were so relaxed about it in hindsight. I think that if that was the situation now, I would be panicking so much.
But I mean not that having a baby is the worst that can happen, but kind of something that seems quite disastrous or catastrophic, like, happened to you and you just rolled with it and you dealt with that. So it kind of must have been a bit like, well, you know, what's the worst that can happen?
That's like, the thing, I'd say it was quite character building, and we just learned it's fine, we'll fall on our feet, don't worry, let's just enjoy what we're doing right now. And once I kind of got Harry used to France, because we were right in the south in a place called Biarritz, and they've got quite a surf culture there. So that was why I picked it. I was always going to move there, even had I not got pregnant. I made sure that Harry got surf lessons, and he learned how to surf. So I was actually working in France rather than studying. So I had split shifts and things. So it meant that we could meet at the beach between 12 and 3 o'clock and do some surfing. And we'd take it in turns looking after Isla while the other one went surfing. Luckily, my landlord really liked Isla. So once we got to know her, we let her babysit a couple of times. So
it
meant
nice.
Sometimes we would go out just together and surf and go out for drinks and things. So we just made the most of it. It was incredible. I think I'd actually say France was my favourite in the end.
Yeah.
And I think because Isla was a bit older.
Yeah, it always just gets every time, you know, every few months does get a little bit easier, doesn't it?
A bit easier, and they've got personalities and you can see them enjoying everything. And I mean, we were there through the summer, so obviously we were at an advantage that we were in a beautiful location. We got to really enjoy the area. But maybe if we'd have been there through the winter, it wouldn't have been the same. We'd have just been cooped up inside.
Yeah.
So it was amazing, and I was really sad to leave it. But basically, throughout that whole year, I had to keep submitting essays and documenting my time abroad. So it was still quite intense, and there were still times where I was sat up at 2 a.m. writing essays, just thinking, I don't know how I'm going to carry on with this, because it was difficult. But I suppose when you're a student without children, you have moments like that.
Yeah,
don't
that's
you?
True. That is true. Did you ever think? Did you ever get to a point where you just thought, I don't want to. Like, I want to go home. I don't want to do this anymore. This, or was it just always kind of like moments of, oh God, I don't know how I'm going to do this, and then the next day seems a bit brighter. And
yeah, I don't think I ever had a moment where I thought, I'm not going to manage it or anything like that. That's one of my things about me, is that when I set myself a goal that I want to get to, I'm terrible. I will pretty much do anything to get to it. And I just knew, it would happen. There were points where I just thought, oh God, I hate this.
Yeah.
And like, you know, you'd have to go to bed, just clear your head, wake up the next morning, and then everything seems much better. Yeah, so it was hard, but we were at an advantage that we were traveling around. And that was also the nice thing, because a lot of people, when we told them we were having a baby, so many people said, you're not going to be able to travel. And
I don't know why people do this. Honestly, I find it so strange. I see a lot of people talk about this, like the scaremongering, like you're having a baby, oh, well, your life's over.
Like,
you can't ever do anything fun ever again. Like, okay, great. What's the incentive then?
I don't know why. I wanted to say to people, the baby can just come with us.
Like, yeah.
You're still allowed on flight.
Babies live in other countries.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was the thing. It was quite nice. A part of me quite enjoyed proving people wrong and when we were out, because we were right on the border of Spain as well, so sometimes we'd drive over to Spain and spend some time there, and it was quite nice posting things online and making a point, we're out, we're a family, we're doing things.
Yeah. Did you feel like you were quite, I guess, did you feel like some people were quite judgmental about the fact that you were quite young and obviously at university when you got pregnant? Was that kind of something that you felt, or like, so obviously say your family were obviously really supportive, which is amazing, but did you feel like some people were a bit like...
I would say people were quite judgmental when I told them I was pregnant, and it was people who I was studying with at the time, not my direct friends. They were all great, my housemates and things were all brilliant, but people who are on my course and friends of friends, I know that they were a bit confused why we were doing it. And I think I heard someone say once that we were wasting our lives and things. And I get what they were trying to come from the right place. I think they were trying to almost be sympathetic, but we didn't need that. We wanted support. And it's quite nice as well telling people now in hindsight what happened. And people are so amazed by it all. And what we managed to do as students, people have said it's really cool that you've done that with your children and or with your child, and it's good for them. It's now my daughter Isla, she's so good with change, and we've just moved her to a new school this week, and she's just handled it so well. She's just not fazed by anything, which I think is great.
Would you move abroad again, or do you think that sort of that was only ever for sort of your year abroad?
We do go between yes and no with this, because my partner now works for a company where they're quite a large organisation, and there are options for him to work abroad. And I've made it clear that if we were, I would want to make sure that it's in France or Germany, or a French or German speaking country, because then it means I can get a job without having to have that settling in period. But at the moment, we're very happy where we live. And I don't know, I'm feeling quite settled right now. So it's one of those things with, like I said, we don't really plan that far in advance. So it could be that something comes up and we think, yeah, we'll go for it. But not planning it, but we do want to spend a bit more time abroad. So
yeah, so you finished your year abroad. And then did you have to come back to do another year of university after that?
Yes, I did. So basically we decided, I think it was about a month before we were about to move back to the UK, we thought, we don't really want to live in Hull. It's not really where we see ourselves for the next 5 years. So I think we just kind of put our finger on a map and we chose York.
Right. Is that because it was in sort of commutable distance from Hull, or?
About 40 minutes. So
that's quicker than it seems. I would have thought it would be longer than that.
I know. I was surprised by that. And to be honest, even though obviously I live in York permanently now, I don't really make the trip over to Hull anymore because I feel like it's ages away. But I used to do the drive twice a day, and I actually really enjoyed it. It was some nice downtime for me to put the radio on and just have a think. If I had a lecture I needed to prepare for, I'd think about it. Or if I had an exam, it was really useful because I had to do a lot of speaking exams. So sometimes it's quite embarrassing practicing at home and trying to get the right tone and the right flow of your presentation. So sometimes I'd do it in the car. So it was quite helpful. And I'd listen to podcasts as well, French and German podcasts. And I just used that drive to be as productive as I could. But yeah, we chose York. My partner got a job here because there are a lot more jobs, I think, in York than Hull, which I was quite surprised by, because with York, I always associated it more with tourism and things.
Yeah, and it's quite a small city. relatively speaking. Very pretty though, really. I mean, I love York, it's lovely.
It's beautiful. So definitely it was worth the commute again, and we found this house. I think we got the house 2 weeks before we were moving back to the UK.
Gosh.
I think it's so fine, and we let Harry's parents do the house hunting for us, so we hadn't even seen photos of it. We just said to them, yeah, we trust you, go to York,
nice.
Find the house. Yeah, and they did a good job, actually. We loved it. Yeah, we built quite a nice life there, really. Obviously, we were renting, so that was the main issue for us, was we didn't ever really feel like we had a permanent base. So it obviously, for my final year, I had to just get on with things. There was nothing I could do about buying a house or anything like that. So I just kind of got on with it. And then it was more after my degree that I had to think about what we were doing in York and where we were going to buy and things like that. But yeah, final year again, that was, I'd say, if I had to say being a mum during university, it's when you're actually on site studying, that's when it's really difficult. And I remember at the start of the year when they sit you down and they go over all your modules and what you need to do, that was a moment where I thought I might not manage this, I might actually fail an exam or something, because obviously final year is really hard, isn't it? And you can tell everyone has kind of grown up, haven't they, when they get into their final year. It's first year, everyone's just like, it's fine, I'll just make sure I can pass it. And but you can see everyone's the same in final year. Everyone just gets their head down, lives in the library. And that worried me, because I obviously had other commitments. I had my daughter to look after. I had the commute in and out, which meant that I was quite limited to how much time I could spend in the library. And we were sending my daughter to nursery by this point, so they closed by 6 o'clock on the dot to make sure if a lecture finished at 5 o'clock that I was straight on the road. It was quite stressful in that sense, but I just made sure at home, I made sure I had a little desk area. If I had an essay I needed to do, I'd ask Harry to look after Isla again and put her to bed. It was very natural by this point, and I was just recognise if one of us needed some downtime, leave them to it. So it wasn't too bad. I think what I learned though was just don't even attempt to write an essay at home when you're on your own with your toddler.
Yeah. Oh God.
The hardest thing I've ever done, and I think it would have been easier if she was a baby by this point, because.
Oh, yeah. Because they sleep a lot more.
Yeah, I mean, the toddlers, they just have so many needs. They just need attention all the time.
And they want to know what you're doing and want to be part of it. And yeah.
But that was more, I just made sure when I was at home, if I could do bits of research, or for me, I was quite lucky, if I wanted to watch a foreign film, I could do that just about anyway. And so there were other ways that I could kind of keep going with my degree when I had Isla by myself and things. So again, it was just, it's prioritizing, it's making sure that you've got your immediate things done, and that in the meantime you can do the small jobs and the small bits that will really help towards your degree. So in the actual studying aspect, it was fine in the end, and I just made sure that I treated my degree almost as a full-time job, and I was out the house by 8:30 every morning, in Hull for 9 o'clock, and then I'd leave Hull at 5. So it's just finding what works for you. I know that I was incredibly lucky. I know that a lot of, I have met some other people now who also had children during their degree. I think what the setup I had, I was incredibly lucky to have, and the fact that me and Harry stayed together obviously really helped, because I'm one of my friends, that wasn't the case for her. So it actually worked out almost easier at times than I think, you know, obviously Harry wasn't there. So yeah, I'd say obviously it was hard in a sense of you're doing your final year of degree, it's going to be hard, but actually having a child through it, I think there were just points that I had to learn from. Don't do this again. Otherwise it was fine. I think it's just self-discipline, really, making sure that you know when's the best time to do things.
Yeah. Do you think that actually in some way it was actually not easy is not the word, but like focused your mind a bit more for that, especially for that last year?
Oh yeah, definitely. It was for me as well. It was kind of, I've got to get this done. I've got to pass this degree, you know, if I want to get a decent job after this. Well, this is what I thought at the time. I think I've learned over the years, actually, you don't really need a degree to do well in your career. But
you've kind of put all this in place so that you can get a degree.
Yeah.
So you feel like by the end of it, I imagine, like you would have been a bit bummed if that hadn't happened.
Oh, honestly. And I remember my last exam, the layout of it, the format of the exam was completely different to what they told us during our lectures. So you can imagine how stressed we all were in that exam. And I remember coming home and I was so upset. And I thought, if I fail my degree or I fail that module, then I've got to do this all again. So obviously I sat on that for about a month wondering what has happened. Have I passed my degree? And the day before my degree results came out, I found out I was pregnant again.
Oh gosh.
So I think I'm maybe one of the only people that's got pregnant during their degree twice. But I remember I was very happy. Obviously, I knew that it was fine. It wouldn't be an issue. And I was only 3 weeks along. So it was quite nice that I had a good 9 months to prepare and work out, you know, financially what would happen and where would we be living, what jobs would we have. So I wasn't too worried, but I was just worried, have I passed my degree? And the next day when I got my results, I was working at Boots again. I got another job at Boots in the meantime while I worked out what I was going to do. And I remember I got my degree results while I was in the staff room and I burst into tears. I was so happy that I'd passed. I'd done much better than I thought I had. And I remember all these people walking past me just like, what on earth is this girl doing? So, and obviously I couldn't explain the situation, like, oh, I've just found out I'm having another baby and I've passed my degree, because when you're so early on in your pregnancy, you don't obviously broadcast it.
No.
I just had to make out, oh, I'm just really happy about my degree and glad that I've managed it. So it was a really nice feeling, and it was nice knowing that almost that was it. That was the end of that chapter. I'd done it. We were both at points now where we could start our careers. We were about to have another baby. So it was quite exciting, really.
I feel a bit emotional about it now. So God knows how you must have felt.
I think it's just pure relief, to be honest. I think it's quite, you realise after what a weight it is on your shoulders, because everything's on hold until you've hit that ultimate point that you're working towards. And obviously, I think when you're doing it in a career sense and things like that, it can obviously be really stressful. But I think with the degree, you've invested so much money into it. And it's something that can really put your life on hold.
And I mean, I definitely found this, that that studying is much more like emotionally taxing than a job. Like, because I did a master's degree as well, and then a few of my friends did PhDs, and I got to the end of my master's, like, I can't do this. Like, I could probably do it in terms of, like, I'm probably smart enough to do it, but, like, emotionally, I'm not strong enough to study for another 3 years, constantly questioning, like, am I good enough? Am I good enough? Do I know enough? Like, what am I doing? Like,
exactly.
Like, and that is so much, I found that so much harder than just a job where it's just, you know, you go 9 to 5, you come home, it's fine. Like, even when my job is stressful, I don't think it's as stressful as doing, like, long-term study.
No, and I do think your degree reflects a bit about you, doesn't it, in a sense, and what you particularly enjoy and what you're interested in. And obviously with a job, it, you know, people don't really know that much about it unless you talk to them, and it's not a reflection on you as such. But I'd say your degree, it's an important part of your life. And obviously now it's a lot more expensive to go to university, and I'm going to be clear with my kids, when their time comes, just do what they want to do. They don't need to go to university. They could, there's so many options now. But at the same time, I'm really glad that I did it. And even though I don't actually work in languages anymore, I only speak them for fun now if I'm on holiday and things. But I think it's important that you do something as well that you're genuinely interested in. And even though it may not lead you onto a job after.
Definitely. I mean, my master's degree is in gender studies, so wow. it's quite niche. And my boss literally said to me once, oh yeah, we didn't care what your degree was in, we just thought it meant you could probably spell. I was like, great. So I spent all that money and all that time and no one cares about it. They definitely get the, it doesn't really, you know, it doesn't really necessarily matter, like, if it leads to a career. It's just,
yeah, it's just about what you enjoy and having that research and things. So no, I think I'm obviously so pleased that I did it. And obviously my partner, he got his degree and he does not work in history or archaeology anymore. He's a data analyst. So he's also gone completely off the mark with what his degree was.
Oh, but yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people do. My husband's is, he has a degree in marine biology and he works in pensions. So, but I'm guessing there's probably not as many jobs for, like, archaeologists and marine biologists as there are for data analysts and pensions.
Yeah. Yeah. And, although I say Harry didn't work in Germany, he did have a placement at a museum while we were there. And it was all around the archaeology there and things. And I can't remember what exactly was in that area. I don't It might have been some kind of Roman. So so we did a bit of work on that. And I think what he realised was that it's, in our case, it would be very difficult if he wanted to pursue archaeology, because at the beginning, it's just barely any pay. You're relying on grants pretty much, and there'd probably be more. He'd probably need to go into a PhD and things to do it. So I think he just put that one to bed, but actually he loves his job now, and he loves building dashboards and things like that.
Because you can love more than one thing.
You can, like, exactly.
You definitely can love archaeology, but you can also love data analyzing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think right now, actually, as we speak, I think he's downstairs reading a book on, you know, the book Sapiens.
Oh, yeah.
He's reading that at the moment. So he's still, obviously, he's still quite involved with it. And he still has huge interest. But yeah, it's nice. It's nice that when we come home after 5 o'clock, we have other things that we like to focus on and invest our time in.
So what did you, so you obviously work in marketing now. How did that sort of come about?
So I obviously went on maternity leave. I stayed at Boots. I stuck it out the time that I was pregnant with Daisy, my second daughter. I didn't really enjoy it there, to be honest, because quite hard work when you're pregnant, I've learned. And it was great, though, just for paying the bills. I've always been like that ever since I was old enough to work. I've always made sure I'm in employment. It was good for that. And then I took some time out, obviously, when I had Daisy. I that's the thing. I didn't have to think about what I wanted to do because I was pregnant when I found out I was pregnant before I graduated. I thought, I don't need to think about what I want to do as a career. So I was so relaxed. And then I remember when my maternity pay was coming to an end, I just thought, I need to work out what I want to do. And I was so stressed over it. And I ended up working for the university, for York University. It was actually more of a sales role that I was in when I was there, because they have a commercial side of it. And I don't understand why, but for some reason we were given control over email marketing, even though they had a marketing department. And my colleague had no interest in it. She just hated MailChimp. And, so I just took it all on and I absolutely loved it.
I guess it's kind of a bit of a crossover, I guess, is that like languages and then like marketing is a lot of communication as well. Like there is definitely...
Oh, definitely. That's the thing. Yeah, when I applied for jobs, I always linked back to my degree that there's that communication aspect. Presenting as well, because I think I think there's a lot of storytelling involved with marketing, isn't there? So it's been really useful for that, because when you're obviously doing a presentation in French or German, you can get lost so easily and just think, what on earth was I going to say? So it was quite good for making sure in presentations that I knew exactly where I was going with it. It was definitely useful in the end, I suppose. But I left that job in sales and I got a job with a marketing agency. Now, the sad thing about that was that it did not work out there. It was, I think there was three of us who worked there, and then the manager. I always imagined when you work in a creative environment that everyone's quite bubbly and you're bouncing ideas off each other, and it actually wasn't. And I was asked to go out and buy people's lunches, and I was only invited to meetings if I was bringing the tea in and things like that. And it wasn't a point of I'm too good for this. It wasn't anything like that. But it was the fact that I'd gone there for experience in marketing and all I was doing pretty much was invoicing, making tea.
And also that's not, I mean, I've worked in a couple of digital agencies. I know I have a lot of friends. I work in an agency now.
Yeah.
And like, I would have also been like, nope, yeah. Not into this. Like, I didn't come here to do, like, this is not what my job is.
Yeah, exactly. It was hard. I think about 3 days in, I just thought, oh my God, I hate this. And it's when you're paying nursery fees that are basically, they just tie you down, don't they, nursery fees. And
were both of your girls at nursery at this point?
Yeah, both in full-time nursery. So
so that's like more than a mortgage, yeah, is worth.
Yeah, it's double a mortgage, yeah. So I had to just kind of stick it out. And I think I was about 3 weeks in and I just said to Harry, I'm going to apply for another job. I know it doesn't look good, but I'm hoping that the right employer will just understand. And it was fine. I think it took me about 3 weeks and then I found another job and they were really understanding about what had happened. And to be honest, I think they were really desperate to get someone in because their whole marketing team had left. And it was just a analytics person. And then soon to be myself. That was fine. But I remember when I handed in my notice at the agency, it was very much, well, you're the problem. there's something wrong with you. It was quite toxic, to be honest. And it was a shame for my first taste in marketing. That was what happened. But it was fine. The next job was brilliant. It was actually in the legal sector. So I did that for about a year and a half. And then I've just started a new job now. So I'm actually in the technology sector now. So completely different, again, to legal services, but I'm really enjoying it. I think now I'm at a point where this is where I want to stay, in the sector I want to stay in for the next few years. Yeah, it feels like it's just all worked out. We've all just kind of fell on our feet. We're both in careers now that we're enjoying. And yeah, we're just excited to see what's going to happen over the next few years.
Yeah, definitely. So obviously, because you said you work full time, was that sort of a conscious decision of, if I want to build a career, then I need to be going full time?
Yeah, so kind of. So I remember about a year ago, I was so exhausted from working full time. And Daisy, my youngest, she would have been about a year and a half by this point. So I felt like I was missing out on her a little bit. And I asked my manager, my old manager, can I go to 4 days a week? So he was actually really supportive of it. And he said, that's fine, we'll put you at 4 days a week and we'll just see how we get on. It was great. I think it was February this year I started it, working 4 days, and I really enjoyed it. But what I found was that people make you squeeze in 5 days of work into 4 days, don't they? And I found on the Fridays, because I would have Fridays off, that I was constantly thinking about work. I was logging on. And I was worried that if something came up, that my work would be distributed to someone else in my team. I was obviously PR coordinator in my role, but I wasn't doing much PR. And when I spoke to my manager, he would say, well, you're only on 4 day weeks. You can't really do it on 4 day weeks, which now I probably should have addressed that and realized that Managers shouldn't really say that to you, especially if you're a mum and you're working part time for that reason. They should be more encouraging that you can do any job within a 4 day week.
And also, as the manager, like, I quite strongly believe that it's your job to manage the workload of your...
Exactly.
Like, the people who work for you. Like, if they're saying, I've got too much work to get done within my assigned hours, then you either need to resource differently or change things. Like, that's not necessary. Like, unless they're just slacking, which is clearly not the case, and is not the case most of the time, then that's your problem.
Yeah.
Not their problem.
It was interesting because I feel like there's so much awareness now over working mothers and how you should treat them if you're a manager and what their rights are. But I think that while my manager was doing everything by the book and making sure that I was spending time with my kids, and if I needed to go to an appointment, I could, and things like that, he was great for that. But I think he forgets about the actual part where I still want to build a career. I still want to develop. I still want to do as much as everyone else in my team, but I didn't like that my job almost changed. Yeah, that was quite difficult. And then I was thinking as well that I'm working 4 day weeks and I've taken a 20% pay cut technically, and I'm still logging on, I'm still thinking about it, I can't switch off. So
might as well get paid for that time.
So when I applied for my new job, I made it clear that I want to work full time, but I wanted to know about their flexible working. And already I can tell it's great there. They're really casual about it. If I need to go on a Friday to go and pick my daughter up from school, it's no problem. There's obviously working from home. And I think even I'm not going to have the kids around me all the time, but sometimes I think just being at home makes you feel a bit closer, doesn't it? You feel like you're not completely disconnected from your own personal life. I think it's going to work for me this way around. And now my youngest daughter's back at nursery full time. I will miss her. And, I'm enjoying our car journeys into work every day when I drop her at nursery. I feel like it's a bit of time with her. But I feel like I needed it to really get going with my career again. And I'm starting my CIM, my marketing certificate, at the end of the month. I do need her to be at nursery 5 days a week. And I need to just really get my head down for a bit. It's great that I'm in a role now where they're completely understanding of the fact that I've got children, I've got other commitments, and as far as they're concerned, as long as we're doing our job and we're doing it well, then that's the main thing.
And it does help, I think, like, so I quite different circumstances to you. Like, I've worked at the company that I worked at for about 4 years before I got pregnant. 3 years? 3.5 years? Felt like quite a long time. And like, and so now I feel like it's easier to kind of ask for what I need or want.
Yeah.
With, because I know everyone, like I know my managers, I know the people who are in the company, like, they know me and they trust me to, like, not take the piss out of them. So therefore, they don't take the piss out of me. And so I do think there's something in being somewhere for quite a while, if it's somewhere nice.
Yeah, I think...
if that other place you worked, probably not so much. But if it is somewhere good, like having that kind of trust and like long-term, it's good for your career. But I also think it's good for kind of trying to get some of that work-life balance and get those, you know, the flexible working and stuff that you need.
Yeah, it is about trust as well, isn't it? Because I think if your managers trust you to do your job, then you want to do it. And you are more invested and committed to your company, I'd say, when they look after you. So yeah, I want to get settled now in this new job, keep getting to know everyone. I'm hoping, really, I think I've kind of caught up with my friends who I studied with originally at university, which is quite nice that after all of that, we're kind of on the same level, we're all within similar job, and it hasn't slowed me down too much.
Yeah, definitely. And also, like, if they want children, like, they'll have potentially that time out at a later stage. Like, you obviously had it whilst you were at uni,
yeah,
and a bit just afterwards, but, you know.
It will balance out. But, yeah, we've done it, basically. And I think what sealed it was that we bought our first house this year. So,
thank
you. So that was our main point to get to. You go to work every day and you see your money go on rent and nursery fees and you just think, oh, why am I doing this? So yeah, it's quite...
And nursery fees are you're gonna feel like an absolute millionaire like when your kids are not, like, I'm looking forward to that already. Like, oh, think of all that money I'm gonna have once my son's not at nursery anymore.
33 hours next year, and I feel like I'm crawling to the finish line because I'm hearing that nurseries are struggling because of it, and I'm just praying that my nursery don't take them away. Hopefully we'll get to that point and we'll be able to have our 33 hours. Yeah, nursery fees, they are your entire salary. Well, they were when I first started working, they were my entire salary. And you have to really be motivated, I think, to keep going and, you know, be able to justify why you send your child to nursery and basically pay your whole salary to do it.
I always think of it as sort of it's sort of like short-term pain, long-term gain, though.
Exactly, yeah.
Obviously, some people choose not to, which is great, but also, like, it's not just about the money at that moment, it's about the money in 5 years, 10 years, 15 years,
yeah,
and, like, what your life will look like at those points. It's like, yeah, okay, maybe I'm at, you know, even a net loss now, but hopefully, once you get past that bit where you don't have to pay those nursery fees anymore,
yeah,
you'll be in a better position.
It's almost like an investment in your career, I think, when you do it, and the kids like it. I think
oh god, yeah,
times that I have to drag them out kicking and screaming because they don't want to come home. So I don't think they feel like they're separated from me or anything like that. I think for them it's their own little lives that they go off, and they've got their own friends and their own relationships. And
and they do so many things at nursery that I would just never do at home.
Oh my god. The arts and crafts,
I
don't really allow that at home, if I'm honest, because it's not so much the mess, it's the tantrums and the squabbles, and I have to say, right, it's all going away, because you're just fighting with each other, and at least at nursery they can control that. So it is good for that.
I do think, yeah, I mean, my son's only, how old is he, 13 months, 14 months, so he's only just started getting into the tantrum stage now, but he behaves better at nursery.
Yeah,
like I would think they probably have less squabbles at nursery than they do at home. I wouldn't like say for sure, but I imagine
they
so.
they know what they're doing. And yesterday my daughter, my youngest one, she's trying to potty train, and she was washing her hands and she wet her sleeves and it was causing a huge tantrum, and she wouldn't leave nursery. I needed to get her out the door, and she just would not budge. And one of the nursery workers just came over, like, spoke to her, rolled up her sleeves, and then Daisy just went running off happily. And I was like, how on earth did you do that?
It's magic.
Honestly, they are. They're incredible. So it is helpful for that. And it gives you a break, doesn't it? Because toddlers, well, I don't want to sound pessimistic.
No, but they are a lot of work.
They are hard work. They're absolutely beautiful at the same time. They can go from being monsters to the most beautiful things you've ever seen within the space of 10 minutes. But they can be quite difficult at times. So it's nice that it's not really something for me to worry about for the next couple of years while she's in that stage.
And also, I think, I mean, I just feel like I have much more patience on the days that I do have with Ben when I've had some days not with him.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's about enjoying the days that you do have and making the most of it. And again, that's why I went back to work full time, because I thought, I'm earning a bit more money, we can go on holidays, we can do fun things on the weekends. It's better than us just sitting at home with the telly on. Sometimes we would do that. Sometimes if I've got a 3-day weekend, on the first day I'd think, right, just watch telly, I'm going to catch up on some work or clean the house. And it just worked out that we weren't really having fun.
So I believe that you can have it all, but just not all at once. I wondered if you could share something that you're sort of letting go for the moment.
I suppose, again, it's about prioritising. And for us, when we bought our house this year, we knew that we wouldn't be going on holidays for a while. We wouldn't be travelling around for a while. So we've had to let that one go. But that is obviously a huge luxury. I would say the only thing I ever feel like I suffer with is my social life. And I've got some really great friends that I've made while I've lived in York, and I've got all my old friends. But it's just really hard if a lot of my friends don't have children. So if they want to go for a drink after work, I can't go. If they want to meet up on the weekends, sometimes I feel like that eats into my time with my children. As much as I really want to go, I feel a bit, there's that almost that tie, isn't it, that keeps you at home. You just feel like you can't do it physically. You want to be with your children. So it's things like that, I would say. And I think the one thing to remember, especially when you're a young parent and you're at that point where you're starting your career, that it takes a long time, and you just have to be patient with it all. It's really hard when you see on social media all these, I love following all these mum bloggers and things, but it can be quite hard sometimes when they have these really beautiful lifestyles and these beautiful homes, and I have to remember that I'm not at that stage yet.
And what about the days when it sort of all goes a little bit wrong? What are your sort of strategies for dealing with that?
I don't know, really. To be honest, when I find that I'm having a day where things aren't going well, I do very much just shut down, and I just kind of put music on, or I just go very quiet and I just let my thoughts work their way through it. I don't really, because my family are all in, they're all in the Midlands and in Wales, it does mean that I can't really, unless I hand the babies over to Harry, I can't really kind of get away from it, self out of the situation. I just have to work through it. And yeah, I've just found that reading especially, if I can find the time, if I put the kids to bed or something, just do something that will completely take my mind off what's happening at the moment. That's obviously with day to day. The only thing I would say is obviously with how expensive things are nowadays, and when me and Harry were both at the start of our careers with nursery fees and we were renting and we were saving for a deposit, that was more of a long-term thing where we thought we're never going to get out of this horrible cycle. And there were days and weekends where it really got us down. And I would say the main thing to do with that, if you're ever in a position like that, is to just talk to people. And it can obviously be uncomfortable to talk about if you're unhappy as a family, or if your financial situation's getting you down, then that obviously it's not the best, nicest thing that you can talk about, but it really helps because people want to help in their own way. And my family would, whenever my mum comes to visit, she'll bring like loads of like treats from M&S. It sounds silly, but yeah, it just makes such a difference.
Oh, no, it does, because when you can't treat yourself to those things, yeah, you'd never get them, can you? Yeah, otherwise,
just pick-me-ups, yeah, and things. And
also, I think you probably, if you talk to people, you'd be surprised how many other people feel the same or have a similar situation.
Yeah, definitely.
Because you can go around thinking, oh, I'm the only one that's living like this, I'm the only person who has this problem, when that's probably not the case.
Yeah, especially with parents, because obviously we're all in the same boat. We're all trying to get our jobs up and running and trying to sort out our house. And I think most of them will say they've been in that position or they are in it. And it just makes you feel like you're not the only one who's kind of sat at home trying to save your pennies. Yeah, I think that is the one thing that I did struggle with for quite a long time. And now we're in our house and our living costs have gone down astronomically. It's ridiculous how getting a mortgage just saves you so much money. We're still having moments where, on like today for example, we're going to go we live close to Moulton, so which is,
oh, it's so nice there.
Incredible. And today it's their harvest food festival, so nice. And it's things like that we can just say, let's go and get a drink and have a walk around. And we still can't get used to that we can do things like that. And we don't have to think, how's that going to affect our budget for the rest of the month? And what will we have to give up to do that? It's just so rewarding in the end, even though it's really hard to get to the payoff, and knowing that you've done it and you don't have to worry, you know, obviously accepting things like redundancies, which you can't predict.
And you also can't spend your life in fear of them either.
No, exactly.
Obviously you can try and plan as much as possible so you have a bit of a buffer, but you can't constantly be like, well, what if this happens and what if that happens?
Yeah, exactly. I think obviously always have your rainy day fund, but it's just nice that we're doing what families do.
not to be taken for granted. I think everyone could do with having a bit of appreciation if you are in a position to do that. I do often think that.
I would say that I think having financial difficulties, it really does, again, it builds your character and it teaches you a lot about the things that you miss, if that makes sense, and the things that you prioritize, the things you do need, the things you don't need. And it's just so nice now to be at a point where I'm not always thinking about the next thing and what can I do to the house next and what can I buy for myself next. I'm completely out of that mindset now, which is quite good, and I'm just more waking up like, what should I do today? Or it definitely makes you appreciate things a little bit more.
Yeah, definitely. And last but certainly not least, are there any other mums that you think are really interesting or inspiring that you think other people should sort of know about or follow along with?
I don't know. Obviously, I'd love to just shout out to my mum friends who are just doing what I'm doing and going out to work every day and building their careers and things. And no, otherwise, I just think the main thing, or all I'd say to most mums, is just keep going with it. And whatever your situation, whether you're studying, whether you're working, whether you're at home and you want to do something for yourself, just kind of ignore everyone, just do it because you want to, and don't worry, like everything will fall into place.
Definitely amazing. And would you like to share where people might be able to find you if they want to come and see what you're up to?
So it's mostly my Instagram that I update, so it's just Sarah Darby Need. Darby like the place, in case people type in D-A-R-B-Y. I've got a blog that will be going live soon as well, which is called My Little Life Up North. So once all that's in place, that will also be on my Instagram as well.
Fabulous. Well, that's wonderful. Thank you so much for chatting with me today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks very much for having me on.
And that's all, folks, this episode and for the season. Well, I lie, it's not the end of the season, because I'm going to be doing a solo episode next week, just to share a few thoughts on this season and some of the things that I've been thinking about being a working mum as well. But it is my last guest for the season, so I hope you've enjoyed this episode. And I would just like to ask a little favour. I know I always ask a favour at this end of the podcast, but this is slightly different one this week. My guests have taught me a lot about being a working mum and the best way to sort of care for yourself and for your children and your career, and how to kind of get through that, this crazy experience that we're all going through. So if you listen to an episode and it has a little nugget of something that you have that's really resonated with you, and you think that someone else in your life, another working mum or just another human in general, would enjoy it, then if you would share it with them, I would really appreciate that. That would mean a lot to me. And as always, you can also find the show notes for this episode at amyliz.co.uk/podcast. And there you can sign up for my newsletter, where I'll be sort of sharing when the next season will go live, which feels like it'll be far away. But I remember from my last season break, it seemed to go super quickly because I'm still working behind the scenes on all things podcast. You can also find me on Twitter and Instagram at amylizblog, that's AmyLizBlog, if you want to chat to me in the meantime. But yeah, until then, we'll speak soon. Bye-bye.